All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are breaking down the storylines, battles, and competition involved on the Falcons offensive line heading into 2018's training camp.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest run Falcon websites on the internet, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. We're continuing our series of positional breakdowns. We're wrapping up the offense today. We'll be moving on to the defense a little later this week, but we're going to be talking about the offensive line. This is so-called trench week because the offensive and defensive line are going to be the two spots that we talk about this week. And then we'll get to the edge players and then we'll move on to linebackers and so on and so forth. And if you haven't seen any of our previous episodes, that was all we did last week. Quarterback, running back, fullback, wide receivers, and tight ends. Check out all five of those shows last week. And Okay, let's jump right into it because this is going to be one of the longest ones that we've done so far. Because we're talking about, you know, 15 guys, or maybe even more than that. I can't do math. And we're going to talk about everybody. So, obviously, there's a lot of big storylines. You know, one is involving with Jake Matthews' contract extension. One is involving sort of the infusion of new blood at right guard with Brandon Fusco. And the other is sort of related to the Falcons' long-term goal of getting younger at this group, but in the immediate future, having a lot more of the older veterans and hoping those guys can continue to play at a high level during the regular season, but really trying to look in and lock in on who are some of these young players that may down the road, whether that's 2019 or beyond, may have potential to be starters and potential replacements for several of the current starters, as we'll touch upon later in the show. But 80% of the Falcons' starting offensive line is on the wrong side of 30. You know, or technically, Brandon Fusco, I think, is 29 for at least a couple more weeks as of this podcast. But let's jump right into it. Let's talk first about Jake Matthews. And really, the central thing about Jake Matthews is less to do with his play on the field, although we'll talk a little bit about that. But also a lot of the big storyline with him is going to be the impending contract extension that he, along with other guys like Grady Jarrett, Ricardo Allen, reportedly are the next guys on deck to get these contract extensions. We've known for a while that the Falcons were planning on extending Jake Matthews. Grady Jarrett has been getting a little bit more pub in recent months as something that the Falcons want to do sooner rather than later. And we just recently heard, you know, there's been rumors that the Falcons may or may not talk to Ricardo Allen about his contract extension, but Vaughn McClure of ESPN recently sort of made an aside that said that he's expected to get a new deal before the season starts. So we'll see how those come to fruition. But one of the interesting things really with all three is going to be the timeline of when those deals get done. Do they get done on the eve of training camp, which is typical for the Falcons? Do they get done before the start of the season? We saw, you know, Matt Ryan, not this past year, but in previous years, his previous extension, Roddy White, got their deals on the eve of training camp. We saw Julio Jones was expected to get his contract back in 2015 on the eve of training camp, but it really didn't get signed until, I think, the week before the season started. Then we saw 2 years ago, both Ryan Schrader and Robert Alford get their deals done, I think, in November. And I'm sort of curious where I think, you know, somewhere between July and November, we can expect at least one of these guys to get a deal done. My assumption is Jake Matthews makes the most sense just because that one actually probably saves the Falcons cap space. And so that's probably something that you want to prioritize because then you can get that cap relief immediately during the season if you get it done early enough, and then potentially you can roll that over into next year, which will then make it easier for you to do deals with Jared and Allen or whoever else you might want to re-sign or add next year. So that's my thought process, but sitting here today, I really have no idea. I don't think it really matters when the deal gets done, just as long as it does. I don't really have you know, my takes on whether or not a guy deserves to get paid or whether he's overpaid or underpaid or whatever is much stronger when it comes to who the Falcons bring from outside organizations, from the, whether it's the draft or free agency, less so than it comes from homegrown guys. I feel like once you've been in Atlanta for 4 years or more, we kind of know what you are. And, you know, generally it's, are you worth a contract extension or are you not worth a contract extension? There are some exceptions that we'll talk about in a bit. I think it'll be interesting to sort of see where Jake gets paid, you know, probably somewhere in that 14 to 17 million range, potentially, probably somewhere around 15 or 16, if I had to guess. But where it falls on that spectrum is sort of inconsequential to me is what I'm really saying. I think it's really more important about the structure of the deal. You see Nate Solder, who signed with the Giants the past offseason, now the highest paid offensive tackle and offensive lineman in the league, signed a 4-year, $62 million deal. Again, that's an average of $15.5 million a year. But really, when you look at the structure of the contract, it's really a 2-year, $35 million deal. And, you know, if you know, given their issues the Giants have had over the last years, given that Solder's on the wrong side of 30, it makes sense that they're not necessarily committed to him long term. If he doesn't play well in that 2-year span, then the Giants can really move on from him in 2020 without much, you know, issues. If he plays well enough, then it basically becomes a 3-year, $48 million deal. And then they can just sort of play it by ear every year after that, give him a new extension, you know, potentially have a replacement in place or whatever the case may be. So that deal really just buys the Giants like 2 more years to figure out their long-term left tackle positions. You saw a similar situation with Trent Williams when he signed that monster extension way back in 2015 that at the time made him the highest paid offensive tackle. It was basically, it was a 5-year extension, aka a 6-year deal. And it basically resulted in a 3-year deal, or rather a 2-year extension. So it's one of those things where I expect the Falcons to sign a similar deal with Jake, where it's going to be a 2 or 3 year deal with guarantees up front. And the Falcons will have the flexibility, whether that's in 2020 or 2021, to basically get out of the deal. And if he plays well in the intervening time between now and then they probably won't get out of it. If he doesn't, then they will have that option. And I think, you know, it's interesting with Jake because I think there are similarities between him and Sam Baker in a sense that both guys have dealt with a wealth of injuries early in their careers. There have been various times for both guys that they've been nicked up. The positive with Jake that you can say he has been able to gut through all of those injuries. No, that's not a knock on Baker, but a lot of his injuries were serious enough that he couldn't really gut through those and he had to miss some time. You know, Jake does that. He's a Matthews. You're expecting him and his family to be tough as nails. He has a big legacy to live up to as far as sort of being an Iron Man. And so whether he gets nicked up a bunch or whatever, he's still going to manage to try to play. Sometimes that has been to his and the team's detriment, which I think was the case when he was a rookie, and as well as down the stretch in 2016, where, you know, him not being 100% was actually a problem, more problematic for the team than helpful. But, you know, this is something that longtime listeners know I've talked about in the past when referring to injury-prone players, particularly like Sam Baker. I think there's two types of injury-prone players. There's good injury-prone, there's bad injury-prone. The good injury-prone are players like Jake, like Julio Jones, Willie Moe, Sean Weatherspoon, Sean Lee, Percy Harvin, you name it. These are guys that get hurt a lot, but when they're healthy on the field, there is a noticeable difference, a noticeable impact in how they help their teams in their performance. They might only play 7 games this year, but you would much rather have Sean Lee or Julio Jones play 7 games than 16 games of that guy's backup. You know, availability is important, but it doesn't overshadow the fact that those guys, when healthy, are, you know, in cases like Jones and Lee, elite players. In the case of guys like Willie Moe and Sean Weatherspoon, really good starters when they're at their peak ability. Sam Baker, on the other hand, was more the bad injury prone player, which is a guy that's hurt a lot, but you don't really feel his difference on the field. You don't really miss him when he's out of the lineup to a huge, huge extent. You know, not to necessarily rehash old stuff, but you can go back to the 2011 season where Baker got hurt and Will Svitek came in. You know, Svitek was a sort of a journeyman backup at that point, came in and arguably outplayed Baker in the second half of that season. And so when Baker came back in 2012 and had his best season since his rookie year, and the Falcons thereafter decided to pay him, it wasn't necessarily that I was like anti don't pay Baker at all, because I do think his performance in that season merited the team wanting to bring him back. My issue was more that Baker's career up to that point, in as recent as that 2011 season, showed that the Falcons didn't need to bend over backwards with him. And so if they wanted to re-sign him, they should have been playing a little bit more hardball at the negotiating table to get a deal that was good for them as opposed to a deal that was good for Baker. That proved to obviously not be the case. Baker basically got like a three-year deal that the Falcons really couldn't get out of. But Baker up to that point didn't really deserve a three-year deal. He really deserved at most a two-year deal that gave very little money up front, and that the Falcons could quickly get out of. I honestly think they should have given him a one-year deal in reality that they could have gotten out of after a year, but you know, maybe that's not as realistic. And so the problem was the Falcons paid Baker thinking that that 2012 season basically had erased the previous 4 years. I don't think that's really the case with Jake Matthews, and I think that's really where the durability is a comparison between Jake and Sam Baker, but I think beyond that, that's really not a real comparison. I don't think Jake is great, but I also don't think anybody's going to sit here and believe that Austin Pastor, Ty Sambrello, or many swing tackles elsewhere in the league are on the same level as him, like a Spitek was with the Sam Baker. And I don't think, you know, playing hardball with Jake in this instance, I don't think makes a lot of sense. It's basically being like, we're going to only pay you like a top 20 offensive tackle because that's what you are, a top 15 offensive tackle, versus being a top 10 one. And I just think that's, you know, whether that's worth it to you, if it is, then more power to you. But I just don't necessarily think that's a game that the Falcons should be playing. You know, and I'll wrap up this Jake Matthews thoughts with this last little tidbit. But like, you know, I'm not here to try to sell you that Jake Matthews is a great player. There's going to be certain matchups and certain players that, for lack of a better term, are going to cook him, you know, this season and in future years. They're just going to be bad matchups for him. We saw that last year with guys like Jerry Hughes and Everson Griffin and Mario Addison. You look at this year's schedule, guys like Myles Garrett, Terrell Suggs, whoever the Eagles put at that spot, that right defensive end spot. I'm not expecting Jake to come out of those games looking, you know, particularly wonderful. There's always a problem, you know, has been the case the last 3 years, despite his improving play over that time period, there's always been 4 to 6 games in each of those years where there are obvious struggles with Jake when it comes to matching up. I think that combo, you know, fast guys that can also convert speed to power really give him a hard time. The sort of the Tack McKinley type of players in this league give him a harder time than most. And, you know, I think those 4 to 6 games, it shows in those games. But I do think for the other 10 to 12 games, he's going to be varying degrees of good. And, you know, I'll take that for an offensive tackle. If I know for 2/3 or of the season or 3/4 of the season, I'm going to get a good left tackle, that to me is worth a lot of money. Now, whether it's worth $10 million a year to you or $15 million a year is up for you to decide. Again, I'm not really in the mood to try to convince you one way or the other. It just is what it is. You know, he's a left tackle. Those guys get paid a butt ton of money. And, you know, the alternative is similar to quarterback. If you want to save money on it, you open the door to having a very subpar player at that position just to save a couple million dollars. And, you know, especially, I don't think that's really, you know, that, you know, $5 to $8 million that you save, is it worth it to risk, you know, further endangering your quarterback? Maybe it is. And if you believe so, then great. If you don't, then also great. But, you know, again, I think with Jake, he's a young guy that has made steady progress over the last 4 years of his career, could continue to do so over the next 4. You know, that's certainly worth an extension. I'll leave it to the rest of you guys to debate how much that extension is worth. But I do think it's a kind of a slippery slope when you start going down who's worth this and who's worth that, because very few players, you know, particularly at the high end of the roster, are worth their contracts. And there's certainly a number of players at the bottom of the roster that, you know, deserve to be paid a lot more money as well. So it's just not a conversation I'm particularly interested in having. But we'll be back with more content related to the offensive line. We'll talk a little bit more about Brandon Fusco, the newest addition to the Falcons offensive line. But I do want to plug LockedOnSports.com, the one-stop hub of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content related to the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. Again, LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. So let's talk about the right guard position, and that means let's talk about Brandon Fusco. And to a lesser extent, Wes Schweitzer. This was something we talked about on this podcast when we signed Fusco, but I think the expectation for Fusco is that he's going to be at a level sort of comparable to, if you assume that Schweitzer showed growth this upcoming season, you can be pretty confident that Fusco is going to be at that level this year, whether it's a little bit up in the air if Schweitzer is at that level. And I think it compares somewhat favorably to the Mohamed Sanu signing in the sense where the Falcons went out and got a guy that was a known commodity, you know, and paid a little bit of a premium for him in the case with the Sanu signing, because they knew that guy was definitely, or at least close to definitely, going to be a competent mid-level starter and weren't as willing to sort of roll the dice on a young guy in the case of Sanu with Justin Hardy, and in the case of Fusco with Wes Schweitzer. You know, the way I would compare it is like, you know, going into 2016, your guesstimation for how effective a starting caliber wide receiver Justin Hardy would have been was, you know, you weren't convinced that he was going to be a number two. Like, you knew he could be at least a quality number three, but you weren't sure he was going to be a number two. So if you were putting it on like a 10-point scale, he could have been, you know, a four, which would have been a mildly competent number three, or a six or a seven, which would have been a above average number two or something like that. While Sanu, you knew, was probably going to be at the very least a five and possibly a six. You know, I think the Falcons were thinking they were going to get a six or a seven or something like that. I personally think he was more like a five in that 2016 season, but, you know, that's me. And I think sort of Schweitzer's in the same boat, and Fusco's in the same boat, where, you know, Schweitzer's somewhere between a four and a six, potentially, going into this season. But, you know, with Fusco, he's going to be a five. And, you know, once again, the team may be thinking that they're going to get closer to a six. But it's one of those things where, like, you're basically paying for the known commodity. Like, he's not going to be lower than a five, where there is a decent or good chance, in the case of Hardy or in the case of Schweitzer, that guy might just only be a four. And if, you know, would you be willing to pay, you know, X amount of dollars to guarantee that you're getting a five or higher? You know, that's basically what the Falcons, I think, did in both players' cases. And so I think, you know, the good thing about the Fusco deal, in contrast to the Sanu deal, you're not paying a high premium for him. You know, he's actually, when you actually look at his contract, you know, averaging $4.25 million a year, it's basically at like the very bottom rung of what a starting guard or a starting right guard in this league is making. You pretty much look at anybody that's getting paid less than him, you know, among the free agent contracts, and almost all those guys are more seen, at least by their various teams, as backups that could start through the power of competition rather than guys that they're assigning to be starters with their team. And I think that's, you know, the Falcons aren't necessarily looking at Fusco as a competition booster, but more of a problem solver. But I don't think he's guaranteed to be the starter. I think, you know, Dan Quinn's mantra is about competition. I think there will be a legitimate competition there, or somewhat legitimate, I guess, quasi-legitimate, semi-legitimate, in the sense that I don't think Fusco is a lock to starter, but I would, if I was putting odds on it, I would say there's probably like an 80% chance that he starts, you know, assuming no major injuries come into play. You know, I think we've seen Schweitzer get some first-team work through OTAs and minicamps and whatnot. I think that could continue into training camp just because he's the incumbent. And, you know, again, Dan Quinn's mantra is he's not going to just hand positions to guys. He does, but, like, he will, you know, not to be overly cynical, but he will sort of wrap it in this ball of competition. Not to say that players don't earn their spots, but, like, you know, like Julio Jones isn't really competing. You know, that's a conversation for another day. But I think what's going to be interesting, particularly with that competition, however, is going to be to see if Schweitzer does give him a legitimate run for his money, to the point that, you know, we're going to that third preseason game looking, you know, wondering, okay, who's going to start this preseason game? Because that's going to really tell us who the Falcons plan on starting, because up till now, we really don't know which way they're leaning, because those guys have been splitting reps and the competition has been pretty fierce. That may be something that happens this year. And I think if that does happen, and I think people want to hope that that does happen, because if it does, it means something in the sense that I think because the Falcons might lose Andy Levitre to free agency next year, you know, free agent, you know, Levitre's contract's coming up. He'll be 33 next May. I think the Falcons would love to have a ready-made replacement in the event that, you know, Levitre is not back with the Falcons in 2019. And so, you know, Levitre is one of those, another one of those players that has a sort of an unknown situation in terms of his future in Atlanta beyond this upcoming season. I think if he stays healthy and, you know, and plays as well as he has over the last two seasons when healthy, I think there's a very good chance that the Falcons will re-sign him. There's a possibility that he retires. There's a possibility the Falcons pass the torch to a younger player like Schweitzer or somebody else. At this point, who knows? And I think, you know, this is something I've said a number of times over the past month or so, but I think trying to speculate at this point about, you know, what a guy's future is, particularly next year and beyond, is more of a person trying to sound smarter than what they actually are. It's really just guessing. And we all make those guesses. We all make, you know, educated guesses or guesstimations or whatever you want to call them about how well a player is going to play. This, you know, as a daily podcast, it's something I do on a daily basis. But I, you know, what I would say in my defense is when I'm doing it, it's really just a guess. And because we're going to have 80 plus episodes over the course of this fall and winter talking about it, like, I, you know, if you ask me, like, I think this guy will play at this level, but we'll find out, and we will spend 80 or more episodes, and not probably not all 80, but a significant chunk of those 80 episodes talking about how well those guys are playing or not playing. And so, you know, sitting here in June and July is just kind of rampant speculation. And for me, it's just like, let's wait and see, and we'll find out. I think when you look at the rest of the Falcons offensive line, I think Mack and Schrader are pretty stable, at least for the time being. You know, there is a ticking clock on Mack's tenure in Atlanta. We'll see how long that lasts. This could be his last year, or he could play another three seasons or another 20 seasons. Who knows? It really sort of all depends, again, on variables that sitting here today we don't know enough about. And so it, for me, it's one of those things. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And I think, you know, at a certain point, we'll have a conversation about, you know, Alex Mack's successor when it is merited. But, you know, the hope is that we're at least a year or two away from having that conversation. As for Schrader, I think, you know, he's coming off a little bit of a down year. I think his pass protection was still solid. I think the run blocking was a little bit more problematic. Some people have asked me whether or not they think, whether I think that the concussion had something to do with that. It's hard for me to sit here and say that, you know, the fact that Ryan Schrader struggled to create push against Cam Jordan was because 3 months earlier he had a concussion. But, you know, I'm not a doctor. That doesn't seem particularly plausible, but again, I'm not a doctor. You know, we'll see if he has a bounce back year or if there's more of a decline this year. And, you know, he's a year away from that age, that magic number of age 31, where historically speaking, that's been sort of a bugaboo year for Falcons offensive linemen and offensive tackles in particular. You know, Schrader's 30 at this point. But age 31 was the years where Claybo and Blaylock both had their last years in Atlanta. You know, Bob Whitfield lasted until age 32 in Atlanta. But age 30, like Todd Weiner, age 31 was really like the last healthy year that he had. And sort of after that point, he was either nicked up or declining. And so we'll sort of see if Schrader, you know, that means Schrader, that age, his age 31 season would be 2019. So whether, you know, the Falcons could realistically cut Schrader after this season. Again, if I'm sitting here today and betting, I don't think that's likely to happen, but it could. It's a possibility out there. Well, and it really sort of depends on how well or how not well he plays this year. But I think the real key is looking at this offensive line is that guys like Mack, Schrader, Levitre, Fusco, who's turning 30 in a couple of weeks, and even Ben Garland, who's also on the wrong side of 30. All these guys are on the wrong side of 30, and really they're short-timers here in Atlanta. Whether they play 1 year, two, three, or whatever remains to be seen. And I think that's why it's going to be important for the Falcons to have some of these younger offensive linemen on the bench, particularly this summer, step up in major ways and show their sort of promise. And I think this is another variable of why the Falcons are going to be much more willing to fork up a huge chunk of money for Jake Matthews, because he's literally the only one of the seven prospective offensive linemen that are going to be active on game day, not counting whoever wins that swing tackle spot, that is under the age of 29. And so, you know, basically be like, we only have one guy that, you know, realistically, if you think Jake Matthews is going to play, you know, well into his age 31 season, that means he's got six more years, including this current one, where we can expect him to be a relatively solid starter. And that's kind of one of the reasons, if not the reason, why the Falcons are probably going to be much more willing to fork up a huge chunk of money to him, because he's, you know, looking at the current roster, he's the only offensive lineman that is a good bet that is still going to be a Falcon come 2021 or whenever that is. So, you know, we'll look at some of what these young guys will do in just a bit and see if they can sort of give a glimmer of a hope of whether they're viable starting candidates or potential high value role players, as the Falcons look to replace, you know, 80% or more of their starting lineup over the next 2 or 3 years. But first, I do want to plug Locked On Hawks with host Brad Rowland, giving you his takes on the Atlanta Hawks. You can find Brad's show, Locked On Hawks, as well as a whole host of NBA shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. Free agency is a frenzy right now. Find out what people think about the LeBron James move, Chris Paul, Boogie Cousins, among several others. And, you know, you can find that on the Locked On Podcast Network, your NBA team every day. So let's wrap things up talking about some of these young guys. I think obviously the big battle this summer among the offensive line position, the key battle that is a legitimate battle that we're sitting here going into training camp, not knowing who's going to win it, and we'll have an answer by the end of it, is going to be for that swing tackle spot. You have Ty Sambrello versus Austin Pastor versus Daniel Brunskill versus Matt Gono. And I think, you know, this should be a pretty fun competition, at least in terms of, because I do think some of those guys, not all of them, are some young, talented players. I think it's really Sambrello versus Pastor for that swing tackle position. And we've talked about on a previous episode that one of those guys should win and make the team and be that swing tackle, that seventh offensive lineman that's active on game days. And, you know, the guy that's a twisted ankle away from replacing either Matthews or Schrader and you know, being the bane of all of our existences. But I do think the Falcons could potentially keep both of those guys if they play well enough and potentially earn it. You know, I do think the Falcons, you know, if they were to keep a fourth offensive tackle, which would probably be a 10th offensive lineman, I think they'd like to see either Brunskill or Gono step up and earn that other spot. I think both of those guys are sort of highly athletic projects at the position. I think Brunskill was pretty undersized last year, being in that 285, 290 range. And one hopes that with a year on the practice squad, he's sort of bulked up into the 300-plus pound range. And you hope that his athleticism hasn't diminished in the intervening time. He gave up a number of sacks and pressures last summer, but I do think his skill set is very intriguing and very underrated. He's a former tight end. You see that athleticism show up with his movement and whatnot. And so it would be very interesting to see if that skill set translates to better production on the field and better performance on the field this summer. You know, I've talked about Gono in the undrafted free agent breakdown that we did a couple of weeks ago about the guys in the trenches. And so I'll only do a light, quick rehash. You know, he's very athletic. He's got the long arms, the good feet that you look for in a development offensive tackle. I don't have particularly high expectations for what he's going to do this summer in terms of, you know, I think similar to what Brunskill was last year and then potentially as well this year, I think he's fairly raw. But I do think, you know, and because of that, I do think he's more likely to earn a practice squad spot rather than a legitimate shot at the roster, but you never know. We'll see. And I think those two guys are two young, intriguing guys, given, you know, not suggesting that one of those guys could be a viable candidate to replace Ryan Schrader in 2019, but, you know, 2020, maybe it's a possibility. I wouldn't necessarily say it's impossible, wouldn't necessarily bet on it, but they have talent. That's the point I'm trying to say. You know, I think when we talk about the main competition at the swing tackle position, if you were asking me to set the odds or bet money on it, I would probably give Sambrelo slightly better odds than Pastore to win the job. But I do think it's much, much closer to a toss-up than a lot of people realize. I think, you know, being stuck on the notion that the Falcons, since the Falcons gave up a fifth-round pick for Cy Sambrelo, or the fact that Pastore was inactive all last year and thinking that those things are going to factor into this year's competition, I think, you know, while I've been very cynical of Dan Quinn's mantra about competition on this podcast earlier, I do think in this case it is legitimate, because I don't think the Falcons are going to keep a lesser player because of decisions that they made last September or whatever the case may be. The best guy is going to win that competition. And whoever, you know, whatever happened in 2017 is inconsequential to who's the best guy for the team in 2018. So I do think that's a one legitimate competition. I think the rest is filled of sort of a couple of quasi locks and a couple of promising young guys and some undrafted guys that we're going to have to see and see if there any of these guys can sort of step up and be a potential future asset, like we're kind of hoping Brunskill and Gano could be as well. The near locks are guys like Ben Garland and Wes Schweitzer. I think I've seen other people speculate that one or both of those guys could get cut this summer. I highly doubt that. I think Garland has proven himself as a valuable backup because of that ability to play both center and guard. I don't think the Falcons have any intention of giving up on Wes Schweitzer just because he had an up-and-down first year as a starter, particularly as a former sixth-round pick. You know, regular listeners know that at the end of the season, when we were talking about Schweitzer's performance this year, I personally speculated, and again, the speculation, stress speculation, but you know, I think a lot of his up and downs, particularly his downs down the stretch, were related to a undisclosed knee injury that he may or not suffered against Seattle. So I think the Falcons are much more likely to be high on those guys. And while I wouldn't say they're like 100% locks to make the team, they're probably like 98-99% locks. So I think even considering the fact that probably one of those guys is going to be inactive most weeks, if everything else goes according to plan and the Falcons don't deal with too many injuries from their starters this year, that's likely to be Schweitzer in this case. You know, it'll be interesting with Garland because, you know, we know he's going to be a quality backup for the team in 2018. We'll see what his future is beyond this year because he is a free agent next offseason. And with Schweitzer, again, I think it's possible as a future start in 2019 as a replacement for Levitre. And so I think because of those variables and those factors, those guys to me are like 98-99% safe to make the team in 2018. Sean Harlow doesn't quite have those odds, but I would probably say he's relatively safe. I would say, like, you know, he's probably in that 75-80% chance of making the roster. As I've mentioned before, you know, I'll be curious to sort of see if he does get reps at center this year, under the hope that if he does or does not show a massive leap at guard, he can at least show that versatility that could put him in contention and be under consideration as a potential 2019 replacement for Garland if he's not re-signed, and potentially further down the road as an Alex Mack successor should Alex Mack decide to retire in 2025 or whenever that is. One of the difficult outcomes with the sort of new CBA is that the practice rules make it harder to develop offensive linemen. I think a lot due to the fact that there's less contact and it's thus harder to develop those guys because they can't really hit anybody. And so really the developmental system now in the NFL, as opposed to what it was 10 years ago, is more the theory of mauling another human being 101 or whatever the case, as opposed to actually going out there and practicing how to maul another human being. If you get my drift. So I think, you know, this is kind of one of the new sort of things that we're going to have to keep an eye on over the next couple of years in this summer is that unless you're going to have a really high pick, it's very less likely that teams are going to be able to get offensive linemen or want offensive linemen to come in right away and contribute. And really, you're going to see more instances like we're seeing with guys like Harlow and Schweitzer, where guys are going to spend the better part of the first 2 or 3 years in the league on the bench because they're going to need that time to basically, you know, let's say, like, if you were able to practice like they did in 2005 and play like they did in 2005, you could go through some early growing pains and be functional. Like, I'll use Tyson Clabo and Harvey Dahl, for example. Part of the reason why I think they were able to develop, because both of those guys spent the early part of their careers on the practice squad. I think Clabo spent 1 year in Denver and then wound up playing in 05 in Atlanta. Harvey Dahl spent like a year in 06 or 07 with the 49ers, then spent a year, I think, in Atlanta. The Falcons picked him up, and then he started in 08. So in both those guys' cases, the latest it was the third year, but if not the second year, that those guys were able to hit the field and play at a relatively high level. But a big reason why I think those guys were having success, were able to have that success early in their careers, despite being undrafted free agents, was the fact that they got to play in NFL Europe in the intervening years. And so being able to basically have 10 games against, you know, decent players, not necessarily high-level NFL players, went a long way to developing those guys. And that's, you know, reason number 426 of why the NFL desperately needs a developmental league, given the way that the rules are now. It's much more, but that's a podcast for another day. I'm sure I will devote, you know, four or more podcasts about that subject over the next 2 or 3 years here and more. So I do think that is something that we need to pay attention to. And that's just something that these guys aren't getting. And so it's really important for these guys to play good football in the preseason, because basically those four games in the preseason is only the only opportunity that these guys are going to actually get to really go out there and hit other human beings. Like, they do that in practice, but they're not going after Grady Jarrett in the same way that they're going after, you know, Jordan Phillips or whoever it is. And so I think that's what we're hoping to see. One or more of these guys provide that little bit of a spark, because, you know, basically these guys are going to be in situations that unless they have the draft pedigree of a Jake Matthews, of an Isaiah Wynn, of a Will Hernandez, that these teams invested high picks in, you know, their teams are not going to be willing to go through growing pains. They'll be willing to go through growing pains with those guys that I just mentioned because they were high value picks. But a fourth, a sixth round pick, no, they're not going to go through growing. If you can't cut it as a first-year starter with those guys, you're going back to the bench. We've seen that with Schweitzer, you know, and that's why teams like the Falcons brought in Brandon Fussell. That's why a team like the Giants brings in a John Grieco. You're not going to necessarily go through the growing pains with a fourth or you know, a day-three pick like you would with an early-round pick. You'll just sign a veteran, come in, keep the seat warm, and buy that guy another year or two to develop. And I think that's really the strategy that the Falcons have sort of been utilizing these last couple of years, with their emphasis on some of these veteran players. And, you know, it's certainly been a little bit frustrating to see the Falcons continually pass on talented offensive linemen early in many of these recent drafts. But so far, the recent results do suggest that this strategy of sort of taking mid and late round guys and letting them develop for 2 or 3 years while veterans keep the spot warm, whether that's Chester, whether that's Lavitre, whether that's Fusco, etc., even Alex Mack to a certain extent, it's kind of been working. So you can't really complain too much about it. But, you know, I do want to wrap this up, as we are going a little long, and wrap up by talking about these last couple of guys that we are bringing to camp and sort of what their expectations are. You know, I think the rest of them are really sort of vying for practice squad spots. You got Jamil Douglas at guard, Selesi Uhatefi, the undrafted free agent at guard, J.C. Hasenauer, the undrafted center. I think there's a chance that Jamil Douglas could give Harlow a run for his money. I don't think it's a very high chance, but it exists. You know, it's something out there, probably in the single digits or in the low teens, but it's out there. I would be surprised by it, but it wouldn't be like completely out of left field. Oh, Jamil Douglas is better than Sean Harlow. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think really of that group, the most intriguing guy is J.C. Hasenauer. We talked a little bit about this on that previously mentioned undrafted free agent episode. You know, he barely played at Alabama, but he was a very highly touted recruit coming out of high school. I think he was the number one center, if I recall what I said on that episode, the number one center in the country in a lot of scouting services coming out of high school. And in his limited opportunities, from what I saw, flashed some potential, flashed a skill set that you kind of like for the center position in this blocking scheme. I think because of the fact that there's no clear-cut candidate to succeed and replace Alex Mack in 2042 and whenever that happens, it certainly is a possibility that I think Hassenauer could be seen as a candidate, could throw his hat in the ring, not probably necessarily as a roster piece, but as a practice squad option. I certainly think that's a possibility. So I think, you know, it would be an interesting group because we saw, you know, one of the things that I took away from last summer, particularly in that first game, which I, if I'm not mistaken, was against Miami, the Falcons' second and third string offensive line got destroyed. And it was very clear, you know, my speculation, my theory is the lack of practice reps of being able to hit those guys was very overwhelming when they got into the first game and saw how physical, particularly that Miami, you know, the depth on that Miami defensive line was. And they got destroyed in that game, for lack of a better term. And I said at the time, Sean Harlow probably played one of the worst games I've seen from an offensive lineman in a very long time. Now, the good thing that Harlow did was he improved over the rest of the summer, which is why I'm a little bit more optimistic about what he can do this summer, because, you know, growth is good. I'll be curious to see if we see repeat of that. And if we don't, then I think that means that the Falcons coaching staff has made some sort of adjustment. What that adjustment is, I have no idea. That's why those guys get paid, you know, six-figure salaries and why I get paid six. You know, so we'll see how it sort of goes in. But if we do see another sort of instance where some of these inexperienced guys, the non-Harlow, you know, some of these guys have been exposed to it for at least a year, so we shouldn't expect them to sort of fall flat on their face. But some of the other guys may come in and struggle, and it'll just go and show that, okay, this is a thing. You know, it may not necessarily be a thing that the Falcons coaching staff in particular is struggling to deal with. This may be a league-wide, issue. I haven't watched enough other teams' first preseason games to really tell. But generally speaking, offensive line play isn't great in preseason. So I do think this is something that we'll have to keep an eye on this summer, see how those guys do. If any of the cream rises to the top among these second and third string guys, I'm not overly concerned about the starting lineup. I think we've had stability there over the last couple of years, even bringing in a guy like Fusco, even bringing in a guy like Schweitzer the last couple of years. I feel like, you know, if you're only replacing one starter, you're doing fine. Unlike some of these other teams that are replacing three and four guys every other year. I'm much more intrigued with the backups and how they perform and seeing if any of these guys sort of are intriguing to be like, okay, let's talk about maybe one of these guys being in the mix to be a starter in 2020 or something like that. I think the key is it means that, you know, when we talk about the long-term future, at some point the Falcons are going to have to invest in a young, talented offensive lineman, I guess is what I'm getting at. My expectation is they have been punting for the last couple of years at that spot by passing on some of these guys in the first and second and third rounds of some of these recent drafts. And I feel like they can only punt for so long, but it's much easier to punt if a guy like Schweitzer, if a guy like Harlow, Brunskill, or Gano, if one or two or more of those guys show enough that makes you a little bit intrigued that you're like, maybe we can continue to sort of, not necessarily punt, but sort of bide our time to see if maybe this guy can be the guy. And so instead of being forced to replace 80% of your starting lineup over the next 2 or 3 years, maybe you're only replacing 40%, which is a much easier obstacle to overcome or something like that. So that's where my head is at. And I think, you know, after talking to you guys for 45 minutes, I think your head should be at going into the summer. And so we'll see what comes to it. You know, it could be another summer of like, oh, this is awful. Or it could be like, I'm pleasantly surprised. You know, that's part of the magic of football. You never know what you're going to get, in the words of Forrest Gump. So, guys, that's it. I won't bore you with any more details about this offensive line group. Tomorrow we should have a podcast talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offseason. We did a Monday episode of reviewing the Carolina Panthers offseason and talking about their upcoming season expectations. We will do the same for the Tampa Bay Bucs. Then on Thursday, we should talk D tackles, D linemen, the hogs, the hosses up front, and then we'll wrap things up, if my math is correct. Yeah. I can't do math. Like, when I'm talking, that part of my brain that can do math in his head can't, you know, one part of my brain is for language, one part of my brain is for math. And when I'm talking, I can't multitask on both parts of my brain. So yeah, and then we'll wrap up the things of the week by talking Saints. So, you know, we got trenches and NFC South this week, and next week we should be pretty much wrapping up the defense and talking AFC North, if all things come to fruition. And yeah, that's the plan. So I look forward to talking with you guys on future episodes. And you know where to hit me up. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans. You can hit up the show at Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address. LockedOnFalcons.com and FalcFans.com is where the show is posted daily. And, of course, you can leave a comment at either one of those websites if you want to provide your feedback, ask questions. Someone did send in a Q&A question, and I, you know, since we're already here, might as well wrap it up. Christian Farholt asks, what chances do you see in sacking Sark after 5 to 7 games if the offense struggles? I don't think it's a high chance. It's a possibility. Like, you know, we saw last year with the Bengals, they fired their offensive coordinator, Zampezi, after, 2 games. And because the Bengals didn't score a single offensive touchdown in those first 2 games, he was sort of already on hot seat. And so if you have a similar situation where in the first 3 games the Falcons only score, 1 touchdown, you know, I think it's going to be a lot harder. You know, the chances of Sark getting sacked midseason go up. I still don't think that's necessarily something that Dan Quinn is likely to do. It has to be pretty bad, I think, in sort of that way where the Falcons just can't score at all the first month of the season. You know, they do face some decent defenses, but nothing that makes you really say, oh no, Philadelphia is good, but, you know, I could understand not scoring against Philadelphia, but New Orleans and Carolina and those guys, they are good defenses, but we should be able to get 20, 24, 27 points against those defenses, I would hope. But so I don't think it's likely, but it's possible. I wouldn't sit here and say there's no chance that it happens. But you would have to have a really, really bad offensive start where, you know, if you're talking in the first 5 games, you're talking 3 touchdowns in those 5 games and a whole bunch of field goals, you know, that type of performance where the first 5 games, the Falcons are averaging 13 points a game. It has to be that level of bad, which I think most of us, even the biggest critic of Sark, doesn't think it's going to be that bad. Really, probably the worst case, or one hopes the worst case scenario, doesn't get worse than this, but is that the worst case scenario is the Falcons offense shows little to no improvement from last year. And we're talking they're averaging 21, 22, 23 points a game, as opposed to the 26, 27, 28 that I think most of us are hoping and expecting them to. So to answer your question again, chances are low. It's not impossible, but I would hope everything, you know, goes enough according to plan that that's not a real issue. So because we have so much other content coming in the coming weeks, as I mentioned earlier, when you send in these questions, you will probably have instances of me either at the beginning of episodes or at the end of episodes answering these questions, you know, spending a couple of minutes here answering these questions. So go ahead and send those in. Christian sent it in on Twitter, sent it to Locked On Falcons, the show's Twitter handle. And so, you know how it does. So, all right, guys, that's it. Appreciate you tuning in for this extra long episode. I will try to be less long-winded when we talk defensive line. And because we're not talking about all defensive linemen. We're just talking about the hog mollies. It shouldn't be as long. So look forward to that in the coming days, and certainly much shorter show tomorrow with Tim Kimball.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Sorry, trying to get a fly.